We're continuing with Tehillim, the 49th chapter, the 11th pasuk. Ki yireh chachamim yamutu, yachad kisil vavar yovedu, vazevula chereim chelam. Ki yireh. For he witnesses, he sees, chachamim yamutu. Wise people, they die. Their wisdom doesn't save them from death. Yachad kesil vavar yovedu. You see that everyone dies. Doesn't matter if he's smart, if he's foolish. Doesn't matter if he's an absolute fool. Yovedu. Everyone's lost. Vazevu lacherim chelam. And they leave their wealth for other people who didn't work hard to make that wealth. So, you see, all the wealth didn't afford the wise man any protection. Doesn't matter if he's wise, if he's stupid, if he's foolish. At the end of the day, they leave their money for someone else. Kirbam bateimo le'olam. Kirbam, so deep down inside, bateimo le'olam. People think they're building houses forever. I can't remember, I was a child, there was a rabbi who came to the United States and started walking around, and there was a whole group of people walking with him. They were on their way to Achnasa Sefer Torah. One of the wealthy people in the neighborhood had donated a Sefer Torah. And he looks around and he's walking and he sees all these mansions the Jews built in New York. And he looks at it and he says, I don't understand. So they asked him, what don't you understand? He said, you think you guys are staying here forever? What'd you build these houses for?
What's the problem? You live in the house and then eventually you're so married someday you can live in the house.
Kirbam bateimo le'olam. Says the sons of Korach, they say, Kirbam, deep down inside, a person thinks, Bateimo le'olam. I'm going to have that house forever. You see, Larry just said it. Me, my children, my grandchildren. But the truth is, it's the me. I have a friend who shared with me that about 2 or 3 years ago, he had his 36th birthday, and he started realizing that he won't live forever. So he said, I know we all say it. The question is, do we live it? We say it, but do we really think so? Rav Sadia Gaon has a similar thought. He says, when someone old dies, you figure, he's so old, fine, I got a ways to go till I get there. When someone young dies, you say, I passed that stage already. Whatever happens, we don't get the hint.
Why do you think human beings, they have this sense of invincibility?
So we saw, I think it's in the Sefer HaMidot, he said that this allows us to produce. Meaning if we'd spend our lives thinking about the fact that we're going to die, then we could be frozen. And we could reach a point where there's no point in advancing the world. But if you think about it, then you have to develop that thought. Well, the question is, what am I supposed to develop? Meaning, on some level, the world is a pyramid. And you have a lot of people working at the bottom of the pyramid for the people on top. And the question is, where are you going to be on that pyramid? There are going to be a lot of people working. The big question is, where are you?
It's true that by being brought in a society that, at least when I was probably even now, probably it's still going on now, but when I was actually even worse. A society that everything is about negativity, everything is about, you know, it's like, people are sad, that's the culture, you know, and the songs are sad, and songs is to evoke feelings of sadness and of deepness, you know, depression. So being brought in one of these societies, It's true. I used to think about that, this and that, and thought that's the way I would talk in a certain way. And it was until high school that someone had a very real conversation with me. And from that moment on, I really changed my mindset. But it's very heavy to leave and know that this man, what you're doing, you might die at any second, you might die at any moment. So what you're feeling is just like you're feeling like sand. You know, anything can just like vanish and gone.
Physical things. Spiritual things are eternal.
Probably in these kind of societies, you only give importance, you only see the physical, you don't see the spiritual, because there is no, if you can die at any moment, there is no spiritual things. You just.
So that's what he's saying. People focus on the physical, the material. He's saying his great riddle is, why are you scared when trouble comes? And he says, because you put your confidence in the wrong things. Meaning, if there were a connection to Hashem, if Hashem were in the picture, if you're talking to God and He's part of your life, then there's nothing to fear, and your investments are worthwhile, and your life is worthwhile. He's saying, I look around and I see people's confidence is in their money. And then when the stock market starts crashing, they're worried. And when they say, well, the euro might collapse, and the dollar might collapse, and so you put your money in gold, and then they say, no, gold isn't good for deflation. In a deflationary market, you lose on gold. And suddenly gold loses 15% in 3 days, and you say, oh boy, so where am I supposed to put my money? Now what? Right?
Mansion.
Where?
The mansion.
Now the mansion, right. Real estate, because real estate has proven itself so well in the last half a decade. So where? What am I supposed to do? Put in copper, it lost 23% that same day. Where am I supposed to put it? Silver, 10%? Put it in your pocket as what? In what currency? Where? Where? Tell me what?
Shekels.
Yes, the shekel. Because the shekel lost a half a dollar to the dollar. So I guess a half a dollar out of $3, that's 6% in the last 4 months. Yeah, okay. It only lost 6% in 4 months. I guess, okay, fine, shekel. What? Chinese one. Yeah, right. Okay.
What's it help? So you give it to tzedakah, and what does the person do with your money? He uses it on physical stuff.
That didn't say you shouldn't do something positive. The question is, where are you putting your confidence? No one's saying you shouldn't have money and you shouldn't do good things with it. We're saying, but if one's confidence is in the finances and his assets, so then it's stemming from this attitude of kirbam, deep down inside, batem ololam. I think that my house is for eternity. Mishkinotam ledovado. Deep down inside, a person has this illusion of invincibility, and mishkinotam ledovado. He thinks I'm going to be around for generations. Karuvishmotam ale adamot. They put these big signs, Trump Towers. Do you really think that sign is going to stay there forever? Do you really think people are going to care who Trump was in 50 years?
Rob, if your neshama is eternal and it's really your true essence of who you are, then aren't we already living in the eternal if we pay close enough attention, if we're connecting ourselves to the neshama?
Yeah, that's what he's saying. To lead a life of value, but not a life that's focused on the material.
Yeah, I'm saying obviously the material is never going to save you. It's clear, it's right here.
So that's what he's saying. That's what he's saying.
Really feel the.
But he says people ignore it. You know, it's very interesting. I was in a park, and you heard the following conversation between a mother and her daughter. The mother is the grandmother. The daughter is the mother of the children. The mother came in. She came in from Australia, and she brings all these toys with her from Australia. And you see these simple kids who are playing beautifully and having a great time, and suddenly they get this gadget, this electronic car, and a whole bunch of other gadgets, which they never saw in their lives, and they're all excited. And 5 minutes later, they're fighting, and suddenly their world has been changed. And the grandmother says to her daughter, to the mother, she says, you know, I came, I brought all these gifts, but I think the next time I'm coming, I'm not bringing all the gifts. So The daughter asks her why. She says, I'll tell you, I feel like I'm the serpent in the Garden of Eden. You had the Garden of Eden here. Your kids were so happy playing with what they had. They didn't need anything else. They had one another. Suddenly I bring them all these things and they get distracted. And suddenly they're not happy anymore. You think they have more, they're more happy. No, they're very happy playing together without it. We have this feeling inside where the material world takes us in. Where you walk down the street and you see this guy on his iPod and you think, I'd like to have that. Would you really? No, that's a tricky question. That's a very tricky question. So you could give me a million reasons why it's a tool and how many things you could do with it. And I'm a... Okay. And it's not pashut to live in this world and be able to connect to this idea that you're saying, Kalev, as though it's so simple, the spiritual is what's important. You walk around and the world keeps selling the idea that you want to be happy, so have this, have that. And this chapter is what we read when we visit someone mourning. We're supposed to take a message from visiting someone who's mourning. We're supposed to realize this guy didn't take anything with him. And you know what? One day they're going to be mourning me. I assume. I hope. What?
I'm not saying that it's simple by any means. My point is that a lot of times we're doing mitzvot as if like the reward is sometime later. It's coming later. We do it now, then we get a payoff later. We get a lama ba later. But like to me, it seems the essence is that you do it because connect yourself to the eternal now.
So you're saying one thing. I would add to what you're saying. The Rambam says in Nigeret Teman, we didn't get to it yet, but the Rambam says that the best life on this planet is the Torah. It's not only about Olam Haba. And that's the idea that the Kuzari also develops, that we are not a religion that's focused on the future. We're focused on now. Live the worthwhile life now. So, he's not saying ignore this world. He's saying, why are people worried when bad things happen? Because they know that they have trampled on certain mitzvot. They know they have placed their confidence in the physical, in their insurance policy, in their wealth. And he says, that's not right. On some level. Okay, so he's saying, that's my focus of the chapter, he says. My focus is, I remember, when trouble comes, who was it? There was a current philosopher, Covey. He wrote a few bestsellers. He has guidance for all kinds of businesses. He has a business consulting firm. He's a top consultant. So he said that in his lectures, he often asks his students, when you'll be lying on your deathbed, how many of you will regret that you didn't see another TV show?
Hi, Mike. Versus. I have one.
Okay. Says you have an answer for him. Pasuk Yud Gimel. So I'll have one. Okay.
Everybody has their own downfalls. And when something bad happens, disease or something like that, or people are close to death, their death or someone's death, and they know that they can't help it, will happen either way. And these downfalls that people have, of course, they first turn people to people. But I can understand that at a certain point of our life, we don't let our verbs down and say, okay, now I have money, now I'm healthier. Tomorrow I'll have food in my table. Sometimes we do. It's not possible that pretty much everybody on their own level they think like this. By having money, they think that tomorrow they don't know that. Chas v'shalom, tonight all the banks can crash and you never know what can happen with the internet and no one can withdraw money from there. People don't think that, you know. You have money. You think
granted.
Right?
Agreed. I agree that there are levels of refinement. There are levels to this. It's not either I am or I amn't.
Many things that are not under our control and can happen.
Agree. I'm happy you guys are still awake at this hour. Very good.
That doesn't classify us as someone that is more that's joined more to the material and to the spiritual, right?
I think there are levels of perfection. Meaning there's a guy whose whole focus is as well, and then there are levels, and there's always room to move forward in this. Yes.
By having $1,000 in your bank account, you don't think that's a moral level of money.
I think there are levels of development in this. I don't think a person has to spend his life in fear. The banks are going to crash, and who knows if I'm going to have money tomorrow. At the same time, he doesn't have to go to the other side and say, because I have money, everything's okay with me. It's a balance. It's not an easy balance, but it's a balance. Larry's waiting. Yeah.
I think the whole problem of this whole thing is basically it's putting all the focus on the money, which is basically the same as putting the focus on how many leaves are on the tree outside your window. If you don't really pay any attention to it, then it doesn't really matter if you're wealthy or you're not wealthy. And of course, you need to have enough money to be able to survive, but I don't think there's any great shame in being wealthy as long as you don't really pay any attention to it. It's like you wouldn't pay any attention to the leaves outside on the tree outside your window.
It's a tool. It's a tool, and it should not be a source of confidence. That's
right.
His point. At the end of the day, money, the Talmud says, could get in between one's relationship with one's children. The Talmud says the nature of the wealthy is that they love their kids less. And money can be a great hindrance in one's connection to his creator. It doesn't have to be that way. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was extraordinarily wealthy. Avraham Avinu was extraordinarily wealthy. Yaakov Avinu was extraordinarily wealthy. It doesn't have to be a fault, but it can be. V'adam bikar bal yalin nimshal kabei mot nidmu. V'adam bikar bal yalin, and a person who's wealthy, he has no confidence that his wealth is sleeping with him till the morning. Nimshal kabei mot nidmu. A person who has confidence in his wealth is like an animal, because at the end of the day, an animal doesn't know it has to worry when you feed it. Maybe you're fattening it up for the slaughter. And so too a person who bikar at the point of wealth, bal yalin, it doesn't recognize that he doesn't know if he's going to have the wealth in the morning. If he's not aware of that, if he's not aware of the fact that he's not in control, so then nimshal kabeimot nidmu. Yeah.
So I asked this once, and to begin with, if you understand that this nimshal is, and if an animal is being fed in order to be slaughtered, can in certain instances Hashem grant us something very good in order to destroy us?
Sure.
And
look at Haman.
Okay,
he was lifted so that he'd fall down.
He was a wicked person. But I'm talking about an average person. Maybe, let's say, whatever better name is. But should people be afraid of that? Hashem is lifting them in order to make them fall hard?
Depends on what you mean when you say afraid. If it means that he doesn't sleep at night, I don't think so. If it means that we stop and think.
You get something good and you think probably, or maybe whatever Hashem is doing is for the good, also for the bad. You never know what can happen. Are you entitled to think like that?
It depends on what level a person is on. At our level, I think that it would only cause depression. On a higher level, then yes. At our level, no. At our level, we have to focus on saying thank you to Hashem. On a higher level, there is such a thing, yes.
Thank you, but realizing maybe... You never know.
Not at our stage of the game. V'adam bikar And a person with that wealth, balyalin, he won't go to sleep with that wealth. When a person passes away, he ain't taking it with him. Nimshal kabemot nidmu. So then he's going to be just like the animal when he's silenced when his death comes. So we're just ignoring where we're headed. We're ignoring the end of the end of the show. We're focused on the moment. That's what we said in the previous pasuk. Kilbam batemo leolam. Person likes to think this situation will continue eternally. And that, there's a Hasidish vart that Rav Tendler used to quote. I don't know who originated the vart, about the great wisdom of Yosef HaTzadik. It says that Yosef comes before Pharaoh, he interprets the dream, and then finally he tells Pharaoh, now you have to establish someone who's going to be smart and gather up all the produce in the 7 years of blessings so you have food for the 7 years of famine. So Pharaoh says to his servants, have you ever seen anyone as smart as this young man? What was Yosef's wisdom? Yosef's wisdom was that he knew that if they publish his interpretation of the dream, if they tell people, look, this is a cycle, the market's up now, you're going to have 7 years where the market's going to shoot up, but there's going to be a huge crash, and then it's just going to go down, down, down for 7 years, you're going to have a terrible financial situation, terrible crops, save your money, no one's going to listen. They're going to have 7 years of success, and they'll continuously believe, just like today's good, tomorrow's going to be good. The nature of man, even if you warn him, the nature of man is when it's good, he thinks it's always going to be good. And our nature is that we don't save for tomorrow. When things are going good, we don't put money aside. And that's why Yosef says you have to tax them. You have to take your position of leadership to ensure that they have food in the years of famine. Don't leave it up to the masses. The masses aren't good about it. Make forced pension plans in their salaries. Make forced taxes so you take the money and put it aside. And Pharaoh says, boy, that's genius. And that's really the way it goes. There's if you talk to people, even if you read articles, go to any of the websites. When the stock market's going up, you can see a million articles about why it's going to keep going up. When the stock market's going down, you can see a million articles about why it's going down. And it boggles my mind how every time these people are responding to what's now. Why didn't they say it a day ago? You know, when gold crashed, so everyone said, deflation. Very good. Then why didn't you say it a day earlier and it was going up? You know? Then it goes back up. They say, yeah, the euro's going down, so they have to protect themselves. Everyone's buying gold. Fine. Why didn't you say it a day earlier? If you're so smart. If you have it all figured out. After it happens, they know how to talk. So that's the nature of man. When things go up, everyone says, yeah, it's going to keep going up. When it goes down, everyone thinks it's going to keep going down. And that's why people always mess up in the markets. People buy when it's high and sell when it's low. Why? Because when it's low, you think it's going to keep going low, so you sell. When it's up, you think it's going to keep going up, so you buy. And that's how people ruin their assets. That's why most people don't succeed in the markets. It's rare that you find someone who buys low and sells high. Why? It's such a simple theory. Because it involves human psychology. Human psychology is when it goes up, you think it'll always go up. That's what sons of Korach are saying. Me? I think I'm not human? The theory is good. But
we're... The problem, because you can go down and you can buy and still continue going down.
Correct, 100%. If it were so simple, then you'd have a million millionaires, right? Oh, you guys would be millionaires by now if it were so simple. I'd be a millionaire by now, but I guess it's not so simple, right? Yes, Malachi.
I would say that this thing was it's continuous. How many degrees? Some economists that go out to the news and say, some years ago I could see that this would be the end of the Greece. Okay, thank you. Why you didn't say this? And you drag the whole world down now. And most of these people fake the party right now. They sell the stuff and now they create a party.
זה דרכם כסלמו ואחריהם בפיהם ירצו סלע. זה דרכם, this is their way, כסלמו, what a foolishness they have. ואחריהם בפיהם ירצו סלע. And they, here you have a different interpretations among the commentaries. Some say that the achareihem and their children coming after them, B'fihem yurtzu sela. You'll see them also going along the lines of their parents' foolishness. They'll also do that. V'achareihem. Those that come after them, b'fihem, with their own mouths, yurtzu sela. They'll tell you the story. Look at what happened to my dad. But then they're going to continue in their footsteps. So, Zedarkam Keselamo, this is the path they're on. What a foolish path, says the sons of Korach. Katzon lishol shatu mavet yireim vayirdu vam yesharim laboker vetzuram levalot sheol mizevul lo. What a pasuk. You see, the trap over here is complicated. Okay. Before we go on to pasuk Tetvav, we should mention a Gemara. Zedarkam Keselamo, the Gemara in Shabbos says that there's this foolishness that envelops people, where even though v'achrehem b'fihem yotzu sela, even though they talk about their death, they know they're going to die. They talk about it and they ignore it. It's not like they don't know they're going to die. I met an insurance broker, and it's an important thing. I'll tell you advice for life. People think you need life insurance when you're an old man. Maybe. You need life insurance when you're a young man. When a young man dies and leaves behind a widow with young kids, then it's very hard to get back up. When a young woman dies and leaves behind her husband with a bunch of kids, it's very hard to get life put together. Very often people make this mistake. They only buy life insurance later on in life. Later on in life you could manage. You already have a house, hopefully. You already have things set up. Things are different. The time when it's very important to have life insurance is when you're young, and life insurance is relatively cheap then. That's when it's very hard to get on your feet. So I met with this insurance agent, and we started discussing mutual friends. So he started mentioning, and I know this one and that one and the other one. He was trying to convince me to buy through him. I said to him, I don't understand why you know these people. Why do they buy life insurance from you? One of the people he mentioned was once sitting next to me at a wedding, and he showed me his watch, and he tells me, you see each link in this watch? Each link in this watch is $18,000. He's showing me that the wristband, he told me, I wouldn't have known either, but one of them got a little bent and I had to exchange it. $18,000 each little link in the wristband. So I'm thinking, you know, this is the guy's watch is worth about $100,000. The watch he's wearing on his hand. Why is he buying life insurance from you? You know, so the guy told me, you know, it's a funny thing. This guy and a lot of other people like him, the more people have, the more they buy life insurance. The more they're concerned about, let me make sure everything's taken care of. Life insurance, medical insurance. I know these people. They go skiing at 65 years old. I didn't think they were so concerned about their future. At 65 years old, you wouldn't go skiing if you were really concerned, you know. They get into serious accidents, doing all kinds of shtuyot. You think the guy's a grandfather, settle down a little bit. No, that's what the sons of Korach say. There's this duality in their lives, where you can say, I know I'm going to die. I know. And then I could continue ignoring the fact that I'm going to die. I'll buy the life insurance. Let me make sure certain things are taken care of. But now let me continue living life as though it's not going to happen.
This time, where pretty much you're seeing like young people, you still, like, since you're still young, you still wants to enjoy life. But
I didn't say
you still wants to pick up for his family.
Fine. So if a person recognizes it, shouldn't that affect how he lives his life now?
No, because it's because you know you're going to die, that you should prevent yourself from getting out and from being crazy sometimes, and you should spend all your day in the house.
No one's saying you should spend all day in the house, but you know, again, the focus of the chapter is, where is the focus? What's
If he's having a good time, he knows if he dies, at least things are taken care of.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
How much can a 65 60-year-old person do?
I would think if a person owns like 70 buildings, and a person owns I don't know how many businesses, and a person has so many assets that he's not so concerned that he has to invest in life insurance. What does it mean that he's investing in life insurance? That he realizes there is the potential for surprises in life and everything I have could suddenly disappear. Well, if you really realize that, so then you have to ask yourself, okay, so where's your confidence? So then shouldn't... Mimanafshach. If your confidence is in all the wealth, so then why are you buying life insurance? You have enough that you could buy a life insurance company. But you're saying no, who knows what'll be? So if you're saying no, who knows what'll be, then don't you think you should talk to the one who controls what'll be? And that's where he began the chapter. He said, why are people scared when there's trouble in the world? If God's the one running the shows, then why are you worried? Because he's saying, I haven't really been doing what I should have been doing. I haven't been behaving, so to speak. Okay, so then what? So why haven't you been behaving? Because your confidence is in your money, your confidence is in your asset. So then here he points out, Zedarkam Keselama, what a foolish way. Vachem b'fim yotusela, they also talk about the fact that they're going to die. But they prefer living life as though kiubam b'temo le'olam. There's this internal contradiction that they live with. I know I'm going to die, but I'm still going to live as though I'm always going to live. Just 1 second, Rudy's waiting.
There was this is actually a conversation that I've had in my myself that should I dwell on the fact that someday I'm going to be gone? Everybody's going to be gone. In about 200 years, it'll be as if none of us even ever existed.
I disagree. But that's the pivotal point. Is it like that?
If you dwell on something like that, it can get very depressing. Like, that person's going to be, I walk down the street, that person's going to be dead, that person's going to be dead, that we're all going to die.
So,
and if you dwell on these kinds of things, it gets to be very depressing. It gets to be like, oh, what's the point of everything if everybody's just going to be gone anyway?
So I think just the opposite. Every day I think about this. Because, like he said, why don't I go and work in finance? And every time I tell myself, I have two choices in life. Am I going to work on being a millionaire down here, or am I going to work on affecting the world? Where will the world be in 200 years? And you can make the world a different place. And if you look at world history, you look back, you look at what did David HaMelech do? The whole world's different because of David HaMelech. What did Shlomo HaMelech do? What did all the giants of world history? And it's not only Jewish giants. When a person leads a moral life, he can propel the world forward. Look at Thomas Jefferson. I can bring you non-Jewish examples. Look at what they did in the world. I'm not a fan of Lincoln's. Or George Washington. Even though they each have their advantages. But Lincoln did some very filthy things, like butcher tens of thousands of people and like letting his general declare that any woman in the South is free to his man. I mean, Lincoln should have been tried for war crimes. They tell you all the beautiful things about Lincoln. They don't tell you all the filthy things about Lincoln. You know, Lincoln took a butcher to lead his, whatever, we shouldn't talk about. The general who won the Civil War was a butcher because he was the only one who would let soldiers just die and die and die because he couldn't care. If you could have enough soldiers to die, I'll win the war. Every other general, anyone who was half decent wouldn't have done it. That doesn't matter. Okay. But they didn't care. Lincoln didn't care. His whole point was winning. That's why I'm not a fan of Lincoln's. You know, world history, American history likes to portray him. Oh, man, fine.
Benjamin Franklin was pretty good.
Benjamin Franklin. The fact that he fathered about 3,000 kids is a different point. The fact that he was an adulterer is a different point. But he was half decent because he just sent checks all over Europe for all the kids that he fathered all over Europe. Yeah. So, you know, these are the things they don't like to tell you in world history. I didn't say he wasn't a genius. I didn't say he wasn't a genius. He was a genius. He did a lot of things that we benefit from, but that doesn't change the fact that the man was an adulterer. What can you do? Learn some history. You'll see. The nice thing was that he'd send checks all over to all these women he committed adultery with.
I read myself that he had a problem. And it was his own personal advice. He had this book called The Poor Man's Almanac, if I'm not mistaken. A lot of wise words. And you can learn... something to learn even for people like him.
He was a genius. I'm not taking that from him.
How can it translate from those people? So us into 100 years from now, how can we make a difference from now till the 100 years?
So I think the beginning is this perspective. That's what we're being taught here. And that's why we read this in a house of mourning. What's important in the world? What's important is being a moral person, a kind person, a good person. You lead a life of the Torah, so then every person is going to find his niche where he can affect the world.
So in another 8 generations, we can still affect our family.
100%. 100%. Look at Yonadav ben Rechav. He lived when we entered the land of Israel. He was a person who lived, and he told his descendants, I don't want you guys to drink alcohol. I don't want you guys to settle down in a house. That'll lead you to problems. Hundreds of years later, centuries later, the Navi Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, is talking to the people. Go look at the family of Yonadav ben Rechav. Look at them. Look at what fine moral people they are, because their father left them a tradition. You don't drink alcohol. Their father left them a tradition. You don't settle down. You don't buy a house. You'll always live in a tent. You'll be a better person. Look, he affected his family for generations to come. That's you asked me 8 generations in your family. But I think our goal is to affect the world, not only our family. Okay. And the giants of world history affected the world. And the giants of world history are not only people who were the biggest Talmidei Chachamim. That's why I gave examples of other people. There are other areas where people made huge impacts. Okay? Pasuk Tetvav, which we read with all the complicated trap. Katzon lishol shatu mavet yirim. They have placed themselves in line to be like sheep that are taken to slaughter. And the one who shepherds them is really death. And the idea here is that we assume that there is an integral difference between a human being and an animal. The Medrash says in Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, the animal's soul comes from the ground. The human soul comes from heaven. Meaning even that basic life, what we call a soul, what the animal feels, the animal's soul comes from the earth. And really it's a pasuk in Ecclesiastes. It's a pasuk in Koheles. Mi yodea nefesh ha'adam ha'olahi lemala, v'nefesh ha'beima yoredeti lemata la'aretz. The human soul goes up when he passes away, and the animal soul goes down. Now these people, in leading this type of life, so then, katzon lishol shatu, they have placed themselves on their way to death like sheep. Just like when sheep dies, so there's no soul that stays. We don't have a bunch of flossies up there in heaven. All these flossies, their souls go on eternal life. No. What? Peter the rabbit?
The,
Mavet Yirim. And so the death will break them, because by them, death is the end. You guys know the story about the wicked, wealthy guy in town who came to buy a burial plot. There was a Jewish town where they had a Chevra Kadisha, and there was a guy who never donated a penny for anything they needed. He was wealthy, but he was wicked. People asked him for help. He wouldn't help anyone. No, mine is mine, yours is yours. Don't bother me, I won't bother you. Fine. The time came, he was an old man, he wanted to buy a burial plot. He comes to the Chevra Kadisha, so the standard rate for a burial plot was 100 zloty. They come to the Chevra Kadisha, they tell him 15,000 zloty. So he says, what? A burial plot is 100 zloty. What do you want me, 15,000 zloty? They say, not 15,000 zloty. So the guy takes them to the rabbi, and the rabbi says, they're right. So the guy says, why are they right? I don't understand. So the rabbi says, look, everyone else buys a burial plot. We figure Mashiach's coming, the dead are going to come back. So they're burying a burial plot for a year, for 10 years, for 100 years. You're not coming back, you're staying there forever. So it's a much more expensive plot. So, katzon lishol shatu mavet yir'im. So they're like sheep where the death will break them. They're, when they die, they're going down, they're not coming back up. Mavet yir'im. The death breaks them completely. That's what we said. Their soul becomes like an animal's soul. So there's nowhere to go but down. Vayirdu vam yesharim. And even in their life, there's going to be a time when, doesn't happen in everyone's life, but there are times where those that are honest take control of the world. There are times, la bokir, there are times that the world shines like the morning, where suddenly things look good for those who do good. Vitzuram, and their strength, levalot she'ol mizevul lo, will come to rot in hell. Levalot, to rot, to be worn down. She'ol, in perdition. And there'll be nothing left from their, from all their life, be it their physical or their spiritual. Mizevul lo, from his home, he will come down to perdition. So that's one interpretation in the pasuk. You see, there's a big Rashi in all the commentaries here. I gave one interpretation. There are many interpretations to this pasuk. One interpretation is like this. The way we said, katzon lishol shatu, just like sheep, they will be placed in perdition. Mavet yireim, and that is because death breaks them. Vayirdu vam yesharim, and some of them will even live through a period where the honest will take control of them. Laboker, when God chooses to make it like a morning, that the sun shines on those that are honest. Vitzuram levalot sheol, and all their strength will be worn down in perdition. Mizevulah, from the house that he had, he will go down to that state. That's one understanding in the pasuk. And then there are one. We said that they invest in their homes. They assume their house is here forever. So about that, he's saying, yeah, they have another house waiting, and that's where everything will wear off. Ellie, there's pizza for you there. As you wish. Ach Elohim yifde nafshi miyad sheol ki yikacheini sela. But Hashem will redeem my soul from perdition. I won't go there because, as I said in the beginning of this, I am listening to this allegory. Ki kacheini sela, because Hashem will take me in my life. He will help me. He will guide me. And so my soul has room with eternity. Al tira ki yashirish. And here the conclusion of the chapter is, again, one of those powerful, powerful stories, powerful messages. I used to volunteer with our, we had a morning committee in the shul.
So,
M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, morning, when someone would sit Shiva, so I'd help them carry the Aron HaKodesh and the Sidurim as a kid, and I'd help them with the minyan after I was bar mitzvah. So when he helped with the minyan, so I'd spend half my mornings davening with people who were mourning, and I'd always say this perek, because always after Shacharis you'd say this chapter. And this part of the perek always struck me. Al tira ki ya'ashir ish. Don't worry. Don't be jealous when you see someone going so wealthy. And remember who's talking. The sons of the wealthiest Jew that ever lived. But what was his end? Where did it lead him? And so they conclude with this message. Al tira, don't be scared. Don't be jealous when you see someone going wealthy. Ki yirbe kevod beito, when the honor of his house seems to amass, and everyone's honoring him and treating him with such respect. Ki lo vimoto yikach hakol, lo yered acharav kivodo. You guys know this. They say it in English too. Ki lo vimoto yikach hakol. Because as much as he has, he ain't taking any of it with him when he passes away. And all that honor is not coming with him to the grave. People honor him when he's alive because they're scared of him, because he's got money. But how are they going to talk about him when he's dead? There was a funeral for, there was a guy who was very wealthy, very big in real estate and very cruel to all of his tenants. And when he passed away, so I didn't want to go to his funeral because I said I can't be sad, so why should I go to his funeral? There were other people who did go, friends of mine. We all knew him and everyone knew his reputation. And you're standing there at the funeral. They all came. I heard this story from a few people. They're standing at the funeral and his wife is up there in tears. And a lot of the people that were there were muttering to one another, I just wanted to see that he's really dead. And in the middle of the funeral, someone's cell phone goes off. Hava nagila hava. And he didn't shut it and he didn't answer it. And the crowd was all smiles. What a funeral. And you know, if I would have heard this from one person, I would have said, okay, you know, maybe it was his imagination. A few people told me this about the funeral. So here's a man that people shuddered when he walked down the hallway. And suddenly he stops breathing. And people come to the funeral. But the honor he had in his life, it's over. I didn't go. I heard he died, I just smiled. I burst out laughing. They told me he died, and I said, okay. He was very cruel. I mean, he was cruel to the poor. He was cruel to anyone who came within 4 feet of him. He was a very, very cruel landlord, you know, to the point where, you know, if someone got him upset, he'd turn off his heat in the winter. I was once walking with him, and a friend of his was going to his son's wedding. And he asked the friend, could he give me a ride home? And the guy said, I'm sorry, I have to rush to my son's wedding. So he said, don't bother, go ahead. And as the guy drove off, legitimate reason, he's not giving him a ride. He said, he'll pay for that. I said, what? He said, I'm doubling his rent tomorrow. Okay, that's the type of person he was. There are cruel people in the world. I'm telling you, I don't usually smile when they tell me someone died. When they told me he passed away, I just said, okay.
They're cruel people, but
what am I supposed to say?
Are we on the level that we can really go to a funeral? That's a great
level. I didn't do it. I'm just telling you, I didn't say it should be done. I'm just telling you that's what he says. Lo yireid acharav kvodo. His honor ain't going after him.
Jews against a Jew that died.
What can I do?
I can understand
that. You could say that a funeral like that is tikkun, like major.
Fine. I don't need to worry about his tikkun. It's his business. I'm not judging him. I'm just telling you, the sons of Korach say, as wealthy as a person is, when the time comes that he hits the grave, then the honor ends there. And I wanted to point out a sharp story that sits in my mind about someone that people would shudder when he'd walk down the hallways, and yet, when the time came, he didn't even hit the grave yet. And there's no honor there. There's, when the crowd is smiling to Hava Nagila during his funeral, that tells you something. I never heard of a story like that. Okay. So, Ki nafsho bechayav yevarech. Throughout his life, he will be the only one who will bless his soul. I'm such a nice guy. I remember this guy. If we're already talking about this guy, I only met him a few times. On one occasion, he started talking to me about how much Torah he learned in his youth. Well, he obviously left all of it. Same person. I don't even know if he kept Shabbos or kosher by the time by the time I met him. But when you meet a rabbi, so you want to show your other side. So when we sat down, he started telling me how in his youth he learned this and he learned that. Ki nafsho bechayav yevarech. Throughout a person's lifetime, these people, they do bless their own soul. Other people don't bless them, but they're confident. Yeah, I've done good things in my life. Ve'yoducha ki teitiv lach. But you, and this is the great gauge, you notice if other people thank you. The fact that any person can say about themselves, I got so many merits. You know, we all enter the month of Elul thinking, what should I really work on now? We have this one or two things we know we have to work on, and other than that, we have a million things. We could say, I'm a good guy on this, that, and the other thing. I'm a really decent guy. Well, even the worst guy that the sons of Korach are talking about can bless their own soul and tell you how good they are. But what you want to be is v'yoducha ki teitiv lach, that other people will be able to say about you that you're a good person. V'yoducha, other people will thank you. Other people will say you're a good person. Ki teitiv lach, as you do good deeds. And here there's a dual point here in this pasuk. Ki teitiv lach could be understood as you choose the good path in life. But the more accurate meaning, and this is a play on words which we find a few times in Tehillim and in Mishlei with the recurring message, when you do good, you should know you're doing good for yourself. Ki teitiv, as you do good unto others, it is really lach, you are really doing good unto yourself too. Because ultimately, we benefit from being good people.
Focus should be doing good stuff into other people, not. Oh.
That's, from my perspective, I should be serving someone else. I shouldn't be serving myself. I once had a friend who was in a wheelchair. And he told me that it really ticks him off when people say, can I help you? And he'd say, no, thank you. And they'd say, I want the mitzvah. And he'd say, oh, so I'm your instrument to get the Gan Eden, go find another instrument. it would tick him off, you know. So, on the one hand, right, I'm supposed to do it for the other person. But at the end of the day, this is also true. Ki teitiv lach, a person's helping himself too.
No, but by helping others, you must be helping yourself. If you can help yourself, how can you help others?
I didn't.
It's not bad to help yourself at all. If you like helping others, in fact, you help the other person, you help yourself as well.
That's fine, so long as when you're helping someone else, the focus is I'm helping him, not I'm helping me. Not that he's my instrument to get into the Garden of Eden. Yeah, the question is focus. They're both true.
Every single trait can be used to advantages, like even something seemingly negative traits like anger. So same thing with selfishness. You can use selfishness as a good thing. If you want the mitzvah because you want to do good for people because you give you your own good feeling, right? You want to be selfish and you want to feel good, and you do the mitzvahs for other people, to some degree, that's okay. And hopefully you'll grow. But
right, yeah. For sure. Mitoch shelo lishma ba lishma. Agree.
Yeah. Nobody's helping. Nobody. So there are 10 people. One has a physical problem, let's say. Can walk. Another 8 people are not helping. And you are the one that you are helping, but because you want to get the mitzvah. Again, that's better than nothing.
Agreed. I agree. I agree with you guys. Yeah.
Can we say that if you help someone and the focus is you, can we say that you're the right in the sense that you're helping him? It's like, you know, Mr. Tashem says, if your friend comes to you and asks about, like, what about this field and about that field, and you give him a bad advice, and you're for you to get the field in the end. You follow me?
No.
Okay, there's this example. It's called Makere Chavaro Besetra, which is Yisrael right. Can we say that when we help someone? Imagine someone comes to you and says, well, someone is selling a field, I would like to sell it. What do you think? And you only give negative appreciation to this thing, so in the end, you'll get the field. So you give a bad advice. Which is Yisrael right. Can we say that by helping someone, and you're really focused on yourself and not helping the other person, can we say that's Yisrael right?
No.
No.
Tavo ador avotav ad neitzach lo yiruor. Tavo. when you reach a point that you understand, Ador Avotav, that even his predecessors, who also, as we said, this is a recurring theme, focused on amassing wealth, and you realize Ad Netzach Lo Yiruo, that for eternity they're never going to see light, meaning they're finished. They're finished physically and spiritually. So that's the ultimate message of Adam Bikar, that Adam Bikar Velo Yavin Nimshal Kabemot Nidmu, that you'll also understand that even a person who's with the Yikar, with the wealth, Velo Yavin, but if he's not willing to understand his responsibilities with that wealth, so then if his confidence is in the wealth and his focus is in the wealth, Nimshal Kabemot Nidmu, then he's like an animal and he will ultimately be silenced, a complete silence, where his end is a complete end and there is no future. The soul is terminated as well. And so that's the great message. The great message of this chapter is, he begins by saying, ask yourself, why are you worried when bad things happen? And the answer is because you've mocked certain mitzvot, you've taken certain mitzvot lightly. And why does a person get to that? Because he has confidence in his wealth. A person realizes, hey, everyone dies. There's no getting out of it with money. But at the end of the day, he likes to feel as though his life will be eternal. And that doesn't work. At the end, the person buries himself. At the end, the person buries his future, his capacity to have a soul that's eternal. And you, who are willing to accept this message, don't be scared when you see the wealthy succeed. Remember, they're not going to take it when they pass away. They're not taking it with them to the grave. You will have a future, and you will have a connection to eternity because you're taking this message, and so you will have you should have a life of appreciation for what's valuable in life, and a realization that wealth is not the key to a successful life, but rather the morality of life, the mitzvot of life, and that is your connection to eternity, whereas you will see them. Notice the sons of Korach, their focus is more, don't be like them, than what you should be. The whole chapter revolves around the sons of the wealthiest Jew that ever lived, and that caused his downfall. That caused him to have this revolt against Moshe Rabbeinu. Their focus is, don't be like that. Don't be jealous of the wealthy. We know where wealth leads you. And it's very interesting that they speak about being buried alive, and they speak about burying the eternal, seemingly going with the understanding that Korach ain't coming back. There's a machlokas in the Avos Rabbi Nosson, is Korach ever coming back? So this chapter, the simple reading, is going very much in line with that understanding that he's not coming back, he's finished. And so they're saying the wealth can sometimes bury a person for eternity. And the wealth is what gives a person fool's confidence that allows him to sin in such a way that even his soul is buried and is never coming back. Don't learn from them, don't be jealous from them, and maintain the positive focus.